dream last night. A vision. I saw a world full of people. Everybody was dancing and screaming loud. They were just there to listen to the music.
It was deep. It was underground.
Let's turn the world into a dance floor.
Are you guys ready for a state of trance? Put your hands in the air.
This is a State of Trance podcast.
Hey, what's up? My name is Ruben Ronde and welcome to a new State of Trance podcast where we dive into the deeper depths of certain artists. And this week in the studio, we have none other than Roger Shah. How are you doing, man?
Hello, I'm good. Thanks for
First
having
of all,
me.
Congratulations on the release of Magic Island 11.
Thank you.
It's finally out. Yeah. You were on the episode this week to play music from it and tell a little bit more about it. Well, what we're going to do in this podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about the history of Roger Shah. And also have a couple of questions from fans that were submitted through Twitter and Instagram and whatnot. So first of all, let's start at the very beginning. How did Roger Shah decide to become a producer?
First of all, I decided to become a composer. I always wanted to make music for movies. That's why I studied classical music with early age. Like I was like 14, 15 years old when I started to get into the whole thing of music theory. Mm-hmm. And studied on the side. And when all my friends from school started to play football, I was the nerd studying music. So this is how I got into it. And then we had a few local DJs who had a few record deals at that time. And I had no idea about electronic music. And they realized that there's a composer in the area. So they asked me if I can come into the studio and play them some melodies. And this is how I got in touch with electronic music.
Oh, wow.
So we are talking about early 90s.
Yeah. So you were creating melodies for other people to produce. Okay.
Yeah. So some people were really big in the Eurodance was big at that time. So I was working with some bands like Master Boy, for example, was a huge European German Eurodance band, let's call it. So this is how I get started. And then I realized, hey, some of those guys starting making a career by being DJs, making music. I felt like that might be a good idea for me to give it a try. Even had no idea about the production skills. So I just went to the studios, helping people with making melodies and then same time watch and learn. And this is how I started to get into dance music.
That's an interesting route. That's the first time I hear it like that. So you were a classically trained composer.
Yeah.
And then you were intrigued by other people creating dance music and you were like, hey, I want to do that as
Actually, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And then your first release, 1999, Claps.
This was even not the first one. We had a few more commercial releases even in 94, 95, and then also 96, actually, which is funny that Bossy is sitting there.
Hi, Bossy.
Actually, he's been A&R. At Exit Records, and there was Ibiza. There was a week which was called Ibiza Club Convention, and I was there and I was playing some of my demos and music, and he was A&R, and he came to me and saying, actually, what is that track? So I would like to sign it. This is like how far we both go in history. Like
so, Bossy, about 96, Bossy of Cosmic Gate was the first one to sign a record of you.
Yeah, he was. He was really one of the first ones. Actually.
Okay.
Yeah, and Exit Records was the track. At that time, my name was DJ Shah. So this is how we started. And then Claps was in 99. Yeah.
So there was some years in between that, actually.
There was some years in between. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, what can you tell about that record? How did it grow into the career that you have right now?
I mean, with Claps, for example. That was just a massive hit record in Germany, went even into the top 40. Mm-hmm. And from there, I got my first gigs in Germany, played overall. And then I signed a few big major record deals, one with EMI, one with Warner. That was just right before the whole industry collapsed in 2001 and everything went down again. And from then, I just felt it's time to start my own label. That was now in 2001. We did Charm Music with my brother who was running it. And everything. And from there I branched out and got more international support. Then Tiesto started to play one of my first tracks and actually asked me if I want to create the alias to give him music when he would work on In Search of Sunrise. Mm-hmm. This is when I created Global Experience.
Yeah.
And I think we've been on In Search of Sunrise 4 and 5, which I think was really at that time when he was at his biggest. which was really amazing for me to get that support. And then after that, I got more support in DJ Blaze, and then I signed with Armada, and then from there things started to pick up internationally.
Yeah, and the first, I would say the first record that got supported massively, was that High?
High was one of the records,
because that's the think that's the first vinyl that I own.
Oh, okay.
That you produced.
Yeah, at that time also, I think it got also released on New State in the UK, and then they asked me actually if I want to remix Armin's track with Ray Wilson. Yet another day, because it wasn't the same label.
Yeah, it's both New State.
Yeah, exactly. So they asked me if I want to remix Armin. This is the first time when I remixed one of his tracks, and because of that, I got in touch with Armin at some point, and then. Mm-hmm. I met him actually on a layover in Mallorca. We both were on the way to Ibiza, and he was just walking by, and I said, actually, nice to see you. I just remixed one of your records.
Yeah.
And I gave him a CD of one of my tracks, and he invited me to come to one of his shows. And a few weeks later, I got invited by Armada to sign a record deal. So
that's how it goes sometimes, ladies.
This is how it goes sometimes.
There was Who Will Find Me was the first tune. Was it one of the first tunes that you signed with Armada, right?
I think the first one was the track with Jen Johnston.
Okay.
That was the one. That
Beautiful.
Was Beautiful, yeah. Exactly. And on that master CD, when I came to the ADE to sign my record deal with Armada, in that week I made a new ID track, which I just burned on the same CD. When I got back home, they said, thanks for coming over. Great that you signed with us. One question, what is this ID track? And I'm like, I just made it this week. I don't know. And they said, actually, this is a massive hit record. You should consider making a second alias and maybe sign that with us too, because Armin is going nuts about it.
I have a feeling which that's Sun Lounge and White Sands.
That was Sun Lounge White Sands. Yeah.
So that's when you started. So first of all, you started an alias because Chester asked you to do one, and then Armin asked you to do one.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was actually looking, and that's such a nice story, the way I need to come up with alias. And they told me actually the sooner the better, because Armin want to play it next week right away. So I was I was back from Ibiza, and I always collect all these magazines, tourist books and stuff. So I opened the book, and the first thing I saw was a company selling sun loungers. And I felt Sun Lounger might be cool for creating a new alias with that kind of summer vibe. And I kept on searching, and then I figured out there was a promotion about, they talked about Salinas, about the clear blue water, White Sands. And I felt like, okay, Sun Lounger artist, White Sand title, that might work. And so I sent the email saying, what do you think about it? And they said, yeah, actually, it sounds amazing. And then I think the track became one of the biggest ones in that year.
Yeah.
And after that, Michael asked me, I think that's such a unique sound with Sun Lounger. You should create the whole album. Mm-hmm. Then I came up with, to be talking about now 2006. So I came up with the Another Day on the Terrace album. Mm-hmm. I think this was the album which was the first number one album for Armada in the general charts in iTunes. And till today, it's still in there.
Still in the charts?
It's still in the charts.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it's still there. It's still in Holland, it's still in there. So
that's a bit of an achievement after 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is when I release a new album and I screenshot like the peaks, and then I still see it. Then at some point, the current album went down, and that one is still in there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on that. Well, you came up with Sun Lounger because you looked in a magazine and you saw Sun Loungers, but you have so many aliases. Let me just list a couple of Air Force One, Balearic Session, of course, DJ Shah. High Noon at Salinas.
Yeah, that's my tribal project.
There you go. San Antonio Harbor, Savannah, Sun Lounger. Well, the list goes on. I have like two lists right here with aliases. Why do you choose to release stuff under aliases, and how do you come up with the name?
There was two reasons. The one reason is sometimes because of options of a record deal.
Yeah.
And another option is also just to try out different labels to see how they work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, and for the fact, if I'm locked down with my main artist name, I just create another one and send it to other labels to see how that goes. Mm-hmm. Also, maybe something is depending a bit on the trans fans, because they give you just shit sometimes if you try something totally different. And I realize sometimes, just for my mindset, to feel like you have more artist freedom. Mm-hmm. To just do what you feel you want to do in the studio, even if it's techno or something else, and you just make it an alias and you can just release whatever you want without having people judging you for that.
Don't you feel that has changed a little bit in the last few years?
I don't know. I can't say because now I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
I'm in the stage of my career. I really don't care. I'm tired. I've been tired of all the politics and everything around. I feel like now being around for so long, having an established fan base.
You've seen it all.
I have great streams. I saw it all, but also for now, I just enjoy to make the music I love to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like I feel okay when I do Roger Shah, I go more into my trance, a bit more melodic, a bit more uplifting. With Sun Lounger, I keep it more summerish, a bit more down tempo, 122 to 125, like the last album, and always keep the formula of doing the album CD one, always like chill out. So to have it more branded as a chill out act, because for the streaming, chill out just is just crazy compared. Mm-hmm. When I see like the numbers on Sun Lounger and the chill out compared to the numbers on my trance record, it's just another level. It's another universe, actually.
I can imagine. In 2008, you had the tune of the year on this radio show with Lost.
Yeah.
With Zara on the vocals. That was a Sun Lounger record as well.
Yeah.
And then last year, the last album that you released was Sunsets and Bonfires. You were here in the studio.
I was here, that was
but
really
that's
amazing.
A total different sound than what you produced back in 2008 and that you produce right now.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it's total different sound. I think it's slower. It still has the summer guitars in it, but it has more like the modern elements, a bit more melodic techno influenced. Elements, bass lines in there, just a bit more updated sound. But the CD one is still like trademark Sun Lounger, and then the CD two, the club versions are a bit slower, a bit deeper, a bit more current than back in the days.
Yeah, and that album came after sort of a hiatus because you didn't produce any Sun Lounger tracks for quite a while.
Quite a while, yeah.
What made you decide to bring it back at that certain moment?
I just felt I had not made another one because I've been just too busy with different things.
Mm-hmm.
And during the lockdown, I had more time. I mean, during the lockdown, these 2 years, I think I produced around 200 tracks.
How do you do that?
I mean, there's 365 days a year and I make a track in a day. I was kind of lazy, actually.
Wow.
So
a track a day must be nice.
I mean, sometimes it takes two or three, but usually if I just work on instrumental stuff, I start in the morning and finish it at the night, have a double check the next day and that's it.
How do you produce at that pace? Like, because in my experience, sometimes it takes me weeks to finish something. Sometimes even months. Is it because you work with certain channel strips or something like that?
Actually, and also that's another thing. I never start with it. I always start from zero. I never use a template.
Yeah.
But I know where my kicks are. I know where my samples are. I know how to program the synth sounds. I never use presets. Even I program my own sounds.
Yeah.
That's why it takes longer. Otherwise it would be way faster. Let's say it takes me 3, 4, 5 hours to fine tune the main lead of a track. And then it takes me another 3 hours to finish the track.
That's crazy, man. Well, so how do you start a track? Do you start with chords or something like that?
I always start with chords and main melody.
Yeah.
And that makes me decide which direction I want to take it.
Okay.
And
that's the moment where you decide which alias you're going to put on this track.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, sometimes I work on a specific project and I already know, but sometimes it's really like that I just got an idea of a sound, or sometimes you just got a new sound bank and you tweak through the presets and some of the sounds the sound just talks to me how that sound wants to be played.
Yeah.
And then I would play it and tweak it, and that makes me decide, okay, that could really work for a Roger uplifting track or for a Sun Lounger track or for a Globe Experience or whatever. That tells me where I want to take it. And sometimes there's no use for it at that moment, so I just save it for later and go back to something else.
So you have a work in progress folder of like 5,000 tracks?
Not 5,000, but I think from the last 2 years, I have at least another 150 startup melodies and chord progressions. Always starting also different chord progressions. But that also goes the same with, I have at least another 150 orchestral cues.
Yeah.
Waiting for when I work on trailers or stuff like that. So that's also waiting as starting points. Also categorized in certain moods. So I'm always working. I for me, it's hard to do nothing at home. So all I do is when I'm home is I play tennis, do bicycle, or make music.
That's it.
And that's it.
Okay.
And that's it. And the past 2 years, there's nothing else to do than that. And also no touring. But I never had in my career like a crazy heavy touring schedule, being on the road like 2 gigs a week or something. So my focus has been always been more on the music side, a bit less touring. Where I am now in my career, I even don't do too many club shows. I rather focus more on the bigger festivals and stuff. And that's the really the balance I enjoy where I'm right now in my career.
And when you sit in the studio and made these setups, because we had, for example, the Space Brothers here in the studio, when we were talking about the same thing, and they say they work in colors. So when they feel that like they have a tune that fits a certain style, they name it, they label it green. So it's going to be the Chakra Project, or they have it red, and then it's going to be Ascension or something like that. Is this the same for you?
No, for me, it's not like that. I have just my folders depending on my projects. I say, if I write a melody and I feel that could be a great one for uplifting tune, then I put it in my Roger Shah work in progress folder. And same for Sun Lounger, and same for some of my deeper stuff I'm doing.
Do you still go back to your roots sometimes and just do composing, like movie score kind of things? Or
yeah, I do. I mean, that's why I just said, I have a folder of orchestral cues, like 150 of that stuff. It's just sit and wait until I get a call from Hans Zimmer to jump in and work. That's also on my to-do list in the future. But that would mean for me to really stop. If I would get that, go into that direction full on, where there's opportunity for me to do it, that means I need to stop all the dance music stuff. So, but that's maybe in 10, fingers crossed, that's maybe in 10 years from now.
Is that your aim for the future, that you get in there?
Yeah. I mean, this is why I started at first place. And then I really got excited about the whole electronic music. And I'm really happy what I'm doing or what I did the past 25 years in that genre. But I think later on, when I feel like, okay, now it's really, people saw me enough. Now I'm really like too old for all the touring and all the hassle. Then for sure, I think I would never stop making music. I dedicated. That's my first love, actually, you know. So, and I think that's a big opportunity and option for me in the future to go more into that.
And in the meantime, you say you've been making music for, 25 years already.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you had another production called Noah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now you're 100%.
One of my best productions.
Yeah. And but you infected him with making music, because he's a rising star at the moment.
Yeah. He got great support already. And the cool thing is with him, that he's finding his own way. Like, he's not saying, oh, my dad is doing trance, I do the same thing. He really loves like melodic techno. His stars are like Stefan Bozin and those type of guys. So that's the direction he's going for. And I just had to go with him. We had a techno festival a few weeks ago in my area. So he was giving me a hard time every day that he wants me to go with him there. And I said, actually, having experience going to a festival, but just as a regular visitor, that gave me also opened my eyes what people always do to see us playing, right? Yeah. So now I was the one standing in line for getting a beer, standing in line for fries.
We're so spoiled.
I was like, hell, I never want to go there like this. I'd rather just go to the shows when I'm on the other side, right?
So when you see him making music, what's the biggest difference than when you started out making music? It's a different process that he works with, you think?
I think what I realized with the kids is the way he is learning music is I see him watching a lot of tutorials and just playing around with and finding other ways to do things. So, which is really cool. He has a totally different approach to create his sounds, and which is really cool for me to see. It's not like he's coming to my studio and checking how I do it and is doing the same thing. What he picked up from me is like working with all the EQs, compressions, all the production skills. And it's really blowing my mind for the fact I just gave him my old laptop, which was out of use for me, that he's creating the tracks, you know, now with the old stuff. So I can't wait to give him a better setup and stuff for him to see how he would create with there. So that's really interesting for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, and another thing, and this ties a little bit with a question that we got from Hami Dadini on Instagram. Can we expect any new music? Because last week, the Dream State, we already touched base on this a little bit on the episode.
Yeah.
So Dream State just announced their lineup and you're doing something very different.
Yeah, I do a show called the Roger Shah Presents Tribute to Earth. This is something, a project coming from my heart. Since I'm very in tune with nature and everything, and I feel we are living on that kind of fragile planet and we just destroy it. Keep on destroying it every day. I just want to take this one hour of limelight, playing a big stage, of building a bit of awareness and appreciation for our planet.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I dedicate the show to the Earth. That's why it's called Tribute to Earth. And we would create songs. I'm actually writing, I'm working with a scriptwriter from Hollywood. She would write a nice lyrics, inspiring words. And we would have themes like oceans, forests, all that kind of stuff, showing nice visuals and while I play the music, which is...
So it's going to be a bit of storytelling as well.
I don't really keep it too storytelling that the one would go from the one to the another. That's what I was thinking at first, but then I felt some of the tracks, they turn out really massive, for me at least, that I would also love to play them, not in the context of a whole story. That's why it's more theme by theme.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm really excited about it for the fact I made a bigger deal with Insomniac and also would release a whole album with that and a whole theme, an exclusive show, and release it also with them. So that's something, that's my work for the next few weeks.
Next few weeks, because you create a track a day, so you'll be done in 2 weeks.
Yeah, the hold up is actually the writer.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So I have to wait for the lyrics. And then, of course, when you work on vocals and singers, then that takes longer to create a track. You have to fine tune and this background noise is sometimes when you, especially if you're not recording in your own studio and just receive vocals, then you have to work with whatever you got, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then sometimes...
Create layers and... Yeah.
That's sometimes a bit more work. That's why it would take me longer to work on a track.
True. Yeah. And last year, we mentioned it already. This is another question that came in. PLR 108. Last year you were here in the studio to play music from Sunsets and Bonfires, the Sun Lounger album.
Yeah.
Are you planning a tour around that? Are you playing some more Sun Lounger shows?
Actually, the original idea when I signed also that album with FSOE was that I would play all the FSOE shows, and I wanted to create, I think we talked about it even last time, I wanted to create a live band to bring it really like a live setup. But then COVID happened and pushed back for 2 years. And now already my mindset is already on another place with other shows and other concepts.
Yeah.
And what I do with Sun Lounger is, that's what I did at Luminosity just like 2 weeks ago, is that I would remix the cool, chill Sun Lounger classics and bring it more into my peak time sets. And that's why I named it Sun Lounger Uplifted, which I think for the future is a cool second option that... to do tours and shows that I could say if I do Roger Shah only shows or I do just the Sun Lounger shows playing just the Sun Lounger hits. That could be another option to give me like a bit of a diversity, because usually I play, when I have a, especially if I play longer sets, I play a bit Sun Lounger, a bit Roger, a bit of the other aliases, some of the current album. I have a diversity, but I could also really make a difference.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
Well, it brings us back to Magic Island Volume 11, because on that album there's Run.
Yeah,
there's an uplifting version for that as well.
Yeah.
What else can you tell about Magic Island 11, which is out now?
First of all, I want to say that it's really amazing to see how much amazing talent is out there, and especially we with Magic Island are not like a huge label. It's more like a niche which we use as a platform to support new talent.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of artists starting there and then getting bigger and branching out. But I like to give newcomers a chance. I always say everyone has to start somewhere.
True.
And that's why for me, it's all about the music. I never check if it's already a guy has certain amount of streams or something like that. For me, it's if I like the track, we sign it. And it just blows my mind every time we're doing a shout out for, hey, I'm working on a new album, which is always exclusive tracks for the album.
Yeah.
For the mix album, the amount of good tracks we receive and also... quality and just stuff from guys I never heard about, and I feel like, oh wow, this is really amazing actually. So also it's nice that we always have the two CDs. The one is more deep, the new one is a fusion of, let's say, my Balearic sound, a bit melodic techno, a bit progressive house as always, and then CD2 is more full on emotional uplifting. It's because I like both, I like all kinds of music, and it's always nice if you can do both sides, the deep side and the uplifting side.
Yeah, and of course you're running the labels as well, Magic Island Deep, Elevate, and the main label.
Yeah.
And then I feel that the album is a perfect showcase of what you're doing on the labels as well.
Yeah, exactly. Also, the album is usually really good on streams. Back in the days was also really strong on the sales. I think the 10th episode has been even number one on iTunes in the US. So I think that's also great. As you just said, it for the new talent, just to get the instant amount of stream and recognition, and that helps a lot.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for answering all of these questions once again.
Yeah.
Looking forward to hear more music. I'm very much looking forward to the concept. I'll check it out in Dream State for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to see you there as well. So it's going to be a good time.
I don't have a cool concept like that. So I'll just have to do it with my music. But congratulations. Magic Island 11 is out now. Give it up for Roger Shah.
Thank you.
See you soon.
See you. Bye.
Ciao. Bye.
To check full episodes of A State of Trance for free, simply visit ArminRadio.com. A State of Trance returns next week.